All right, we're at episode 225, really? What?
Yeah, we are, 225.
We can mention that I got an invitation to...
Thrive.
To meditate with Arianna Huffington. Arianna Huffington, one of the most fearless women of our time. On Becoming Fearless with Arianna Huffington, a 21-day meditation journey starts March 31st.
And never ends, because it's a journey.
It's a spectacular journey.
You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 28th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live while hitting the nickel slots at the Sheldon Adelson Republican Candidate Beauty Pageant in beautiful Las Vegas, baby. It's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Jeb Bush is going to win that swimsuit competition.
He is. He's going to play that flute like... like nobody's business. Everyone's playing the flute. It's weird. They're all playing the flute.
And John Kasich is going to arrange flowers to music.
You know who I miss?
Who do you miss?
Where is Polenti gone?
Where is Polenti gone?
We don't know. We assume he's lobbying for somebody at this
point. He is. Yeah. He is a big-time lobbyist raking it in.
Good for him. He traded those 4,000 votes for...
He is now president and CEO of Financial Services Roundtable.
Well, he's holding out for 2022 or whatever. He's going to come on strong.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy week.
It's been alive with stupid this week.
It's been so many people. Really alive with stupid.
And it's just been really like one after another. It's been quite the difficult thing trying to get the butterfly net out to catch it all as it flies by.
I have a theory about this. I really do think that whenever the news turns towards some sort of foreign dismay, whether it's a missing airliner or Crimea, that the problem is the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
And it leads to this opportunity for chicken hawk feeding frenzy.
Yeah. Well,
they dig up all the Bush people to come in and provide controversy. And that's all that I mean, it was John Bolton and Karl Rove. And
Don Rumsfeld
and Paul Wolfowitz and one after the other. I mean, I hate to lump them all together that way, but really, when let's just go through these. Don Rumsfeld said that a trained ape could have done a better job in diplomatic relations with Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Never mind that we are giving Karzai $300,000 in cash a month.
Yeah, just big stacks. And have been for years.
Yeah.
Just to bribe him and his drug kingpin brother to pretty much do what we want. But according to Rumsfeld, everything was going great under Bush.
Yep.
And then it all went downhill, which is why he can understand why Hamid Karzai would back Putin. You know, what choice does he have, really? You know, you mean the guy who invaded your country before we did and stomped the crap out of it? That guy? Mm-hmm. So, but it was Don Rumsfeld. Don Rumsfeld has Errol Morris has a new movie coming out about Don Rumsfeld.
Yes, and he does.
I've just seen short clips of it, but Don Rumsfeld's a psychopath.
He is. He's absolutely just nuts. Yeah.
And he, we'll get into this a little bit later, but he actually proved a David Brooks thesis that David Brooks was touting in 2003, 2004, except exactly the opposite of what David Brooks was saying.
Well, explain that.
One of his columns back in 2003, when Mr. Brooks rather extravagantly explained that now that the war in Iraq is over.
In 2003.
2003. And then he proceeded to do, because being basically a moral coward, he waited until he thought it was perfectly safe to beat the crap out of liberals. Mm-hmm. And then he beat the crap out of liberals. And he had this long column about the Iraqi dream palaces and how the American Bush haters live in this delusional world where George Bush is a bad guy. And he's an oligarch, and he wants to just invade all the wrong countries and do terrible things. And he's a war criminal. And Don Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz and these cabal of neoconservatives long for global empire. And in this dream palace, every story of Republican villainy is believed, and all the windows are shuttered with hate. But now that it's all over, he predicted the Bush haters will continue to grow more vociferous as their numbers shrink. Even progress in Iraq will not dampen their anger. And we'll still have all our alternative weeklies and our Gore Vidal polemics.
Oh, and what we
will do is, in other words, there will be, and this is a direct quote, there will be no magic aha moment that brings the dream palaces down. There will never be a moment when liberals will say, we were wrong, Bush was right.
Oh my God.
Liberals will just extend their forebodings into a more distant future. Blah, blah, blah. The war's opponents will lose their self-confidence and vitality, will backtrack, and they will claim that they always accepted certain realities when in fact they rejected, which in fact they rejected only months ago.
Oh my goodness.
I'm
really astonished by that.
That is David Brooks describing David Brooks.
Yeah.
That is David
and
Brooks.
And Don Rumsfeld.
That is David Brooks, absolutely. Because David, in this new movie, it's Don Rumsfeld, the guy named Jamie McIntyre, who's a former Pentagon correspondent for CNN, is quoting, saying, I know Rumsfeld well enough at this point to know that he's never going to have this kind of epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
He's never going to have this introspective moment when he realizes, even though we had the best of intentions, that many of his decisions turned out to be disasters. Donald Rumsfeld is a psychopath. So is David Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
David Brooks is a more congenial, well-spoken, you know, quiet, etc. But David Brooks wrote these columns about how these fucking liberals are never going to admit they're wrong, even though they are.
Yeah.
Screw these people. They're never, because that's what liberals are, blue gal. That's just sort of how they are. They're just liars. And they're just going to keep lying to themselves. And they're never going to, and even if you confront them with their own words, they'll say, oh, I never said that. None of those people are ever going to pull this column out, which is in print, available on the internet. I've seen it a million times. Or any of the other dozens just like it. Put it in front of them and say, explain to me, David Brooks, how you got this so horribly wrong. And then explain to me how is it you became the person that you are mocking in this column.
Mm-hmm.
Reconcile the shit you're saying now with the shit you said then. And don't pretend
not to mention the 7 more years of Iraq war that went on after you declared victory.
That was what this week was like. It was people like that crawling out of the woodwork.
Yep. Karl Rove.
Karl Rove. Hey, what did Karl Rove have to say?
Karl Rove doesn't like Obama's hands-off foreign policy.
Yeah. He wouldn't, would he?
We need the personal involvement of the President of the United States. President Bush talked to Karzai frequently. Was on a secure video conference with him almost every couple of weeks. Was talking to him constantly on the telephone. That's how you make a relationship.
I think we should also mention, again, another unreconstructed, unprosecuted war criminal, Paul Wolfowitz.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Was on Fox and said two things.
And was not with Greta Van Susteren.
No, it was with Laura Ingraham, whose voice is equally soothing.
Yeah.
And Ingraham asked him, Ingraham sort of set it all up, said, look, I was a big supporter of the war. I was a big supporter of the war in Iraq. But you got to understand, American people are looking at the trillions of dollars we spent.
And wondering what we got for it.
What
we
got
for it. He actually said that. What
and,
kind of bang for our buck are we going to get from fighting with Putin over this?
And of course, that's what we're running into in the Democrat and Republican parties.
Both sides.
And Paul Wolfowitz said, you can't do this in the rearview mirror. In other words, please, for God's sakes, don't bring the past up.
Yeah.
Because if you do, someone might drag me out of this studio. An Iraq war veteran might drag me out of the studio and punch me in the guts till I can't pee straight.
Right.
So please don't mention
but
all the shit.
If you're going to mention the past, let's talk about Hitler.
Let's jump way past the immediate past where I was horribly fucking wrong and a liar. And for my lies, I was given a job running the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, let's skip
with my mistress.
Yes, with my mistress. Let's skip way. And now I have a job on Fox. So, hey, circle of life. But he says, but one of the things you learn from the past includes, unfortunately, the past of the 1930s. If you don't deter this sort of moves early, when you can do it without military force, you end up in wars. And that's what we're trying to avoid here. Because Paul Wolfowitz is famed for trying to avoid wars.
Oh, that's yeah.
And just no God struck him down. No bolt came from the heavens. He just rolled on past. Then let's loop back to David Brooks and David Gregory, because really they are a team.
Mm-hmm.
This is on Meet the Press.
Which I now call the Northrop Grumman News Hour, because the only people watching it are the board of directors of Northrop Grumman. They're the only ones that matter anyway, you can tell.
Well, and they are aware of the fact that the ratings are plummeting, which is why they really truly have instituted this thing called Meet the Press Express. No kidding. I think it's on their tablet or something. But as far as I can tell, it's basically Mark Halpern in a tape loop saying both sides do it.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
That's all it is. It's like movie phone. You know, you just call up and it's always Mark Halpern and he's always saying both sides do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's Luke Russert saying a Republican would say. but the setup was, it was so clear that don't talk about the war.
Yeah.
We have to talk about Crimea. We have to talk about what's going on in Russia. We have to talk about American credibility. And we haven't talked about how appalling it all it is that this guy invaded another country, but we cannot talk about Iraq or the Iraq War or mm-hmm. all of everyone around this table or David Brooks's record on the Iraq War, or anything he ever said. So you end up with this weird elision where David Gregory just leaps over the last 15 years. So he says, and by the way, but this is what Putin's counting on. By the way, he made the same calculation in 2008 about President Bush. But it's interesting. Think about the world when Saddam Hussein took over Kuwait. And that President Bush said, this will not stand. The international world order was a very different thing. What does it take for the U.S. to singularly use its influence today as opposed to in earlier years?
A country with a lot of oil in it. That's what it takes.
Well, it takes you inserting between the international order was a very different thing. And yeah. What does it take? You have to insert the word Iraq in there.
Yes, you do.
You have to insert the trillions of dollars and thousands of lives and the international credibility we pissed away mm-hmm. because we listened to the guy who's sitting right across from you,
David Gregory.
That's what changed. That's what changed. But we can't mention the war because then people might start talking about our unfortunate record during the war.
Where did all this traffic come from?
I don't know. There's bridges are full in New Jersey. Who knows how that happened? And David Brooks, not missing a beat, mm-hmm. swung into action and talked about how things have changed. And the key sentence is, when he's talking about all the things that have, you know, the rules that we used to live by. The second rule is that you don't go invading other countries, breaking down the laws. It's complicated, but basically, and then he just sort of giggles and off we go. And I just kept looking around the periphery mm-hmm. of that little space, wondering who was going to mention, but we fought an entire war in the Middle East, David. Mm-hmm. It was the Iraq War. And we got pummeled because we were lied into it by the person that you thought was the greatest president in American history. Why don't we talk about how badly we fucked up by going into Iraq? Let's talk about that. Then maybe some of this rhetoric will make sense, but we're not allowed to talk about that. So you end up with this weird hole in the middle of the conversation where every liberal who's watching this show has got to be screaming at their television set. Meanwhile, the two Davids, they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
David Brooks is going home to his mansion. David Gregory is going home to his country club. And all is right with the world. And they'll be back next week and the week after that and the week after that.
Yep. And someone pointed out to me, one of the staff at Crooks and Liars pointed out to me that David Gregory is like, it's Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
He's so expensive that they have to use him.
Yeah.
So don't be looking for David Gregory to be fired anytime soon.
No.
Because they've invested an awful lot in this strikeout guy. The guy who strikes out all the time in terms of actual journalism.
Well, then you have, you know, you have loss of face.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been through organizations, you work for organizations where the person that they hired was obviously staggeringly incompetent, mm-hmm. grossly, grossly unqualified for the job they did. And of course, to admit that would mean that you, the person who hired them, stupid enough to do it. And since you are not allowed to admit that, we're just going to pretend that he's doing a great job mm-hmm. and sacrifices many sort of spear carriers and foot soldiers as necessary to keep him propped up. And that's what David Gregory does. He provides a valuable service for the good people at Grumman and Boeing.
Okay, I'm going to give you 3 minutes for Andrew Sullivan.
Oh, I don't need that long. Well, maybe. But it was the crazy talk. It was the great sin. I was on a couple of other radio spots today.
Oh, and let's plug those shows, please.
Okay. Netroots Radio with Justice Putnam and Wink.
And you had a good time with them?
I did. I did very much. And KMO.
He's on C Realm. C is in the letter C hyphen Realm, R-E-A-L-M.
And they were both very hospitable and very nice, and we had a couple of lovely conversations. The good people at Netroots Radio remembered me via Stephen Gilliard.
Oh, my goodness.
The late, great Stephen Gilliard. And his mastery of subjects, his great knowledge of military history and sort of politics and so on and so forth. And I chatted a little bit about how he committed the greatest sin you can commit as a liberal, and the sin that all liberals commit to a greater or lesser extent, and that is accurately remembering the past.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one sin for which we cannot be forgiven by conservatives, because their worldview depends entirely on a manufactured, revised, constantly updated, constantly Orwellian rebooted and reformatted vision of their own past. David Brooks can't face his own past, so he just pretends it doesn't exist. Andrew Sullivan can face his own past, so he just pretends it doesn't exist. So Andrew Sullivan this week has been on about tolerance and tolerating people's language and stop with the political correctness, you know, this horrible re-rise of academic leftists and their political correctness, trying to enforce language and how awful that is.
Well, and wasn't he the one that wanted Alec Baldwin to be snuffed out of the public discourse?
Yeah. And he decried these virtual lynch mobs that liberals form to enforce political correctness and orthodoxy. And you know what? People should just be free to speak how they choose to speak. And you shouldn't be beating people up for that sort of thing, because most of the time it's not racism or bigotry. It's just ignorance or whatever. And I'd rather engage with people than berate them and drive them out. This same fucking guy who raised up his own virtual lynch mob when Alec Baldwin used some very immoderate language.
And inappropriate, yes.
Language. On a paparazzi who was stalking his
family.
Infant son.
Yep.
And that apparently was enough for Andrew Sullivan to call for him to be virtually excommunicated from the media world. And when MSNBC finally cowered and fired his ass, fired Alec Baldwin, Andrew Sullivan did a little happy dance in the end zone about how, I'm glad MSNBC did that. They did the right thing. Mind you, right after that, Duck Dynasty pops up and it's like, come on, these are hill people. You know, they don't know any better. They're a bunch of ignorant hicks. Let them alone. So Andrew Sullivan's vision of tolerance and letting people say what they want to say and not holding them, not, you know, brutalizing them, not having a virtual lynch mob to go after them, only extends to people he likes. Yep. Only extends to his Duck Dynasty, his friend Niall Ferguson, people like that, people that he likes. If he doesn't like you, if you are a liberal, then you should be driven out of the conversation. And the thing is, Andrew Sullivan doesn't realize that he's a hypocrite because his brain just doesn't operate that way. I don't know what it is about conservatives. I don't know if it's conservatism plus getting high all the time that's fucked up his short-term memory. I really don't know. But he clearly doesn't even remember what he said about Alec Baldwin 4 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you confronted him about it, he would come up with some very elaborate, roundabout, circuitous explanation about how this case was different than that case when it clearly wasn't. Which is why arguing with these people is a fucking waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what we need to get into right now, because Chris Hayes wants to talk to anybody. He'll talk to anybody. He'll debate with anybody.
Not me.
He won't debate with you, Driftglass.
No, because I'll ask him questions about stuff he doesn't want to talk about. But I like Chris Hayes.
I love Chris Hayes. And I think he's a genuinely good person. First of all, welcome to David.
Hey, David.
David Shaw Hayes is 8 pounds, was born Thursday morning.
Yes.
And so big sister Ryan has a little brother over at the Hayes house.
And Mr. Hayes had better things to do with his time than
worry about some crazy lady. Pennsylvania director of Americans for Prosperity. She was on his show and she screamed and yelled and waved her hands around. And I actually listened to this 3 times, which it shows you what a sucker for punishment I am. Yeah. She actually, in the course of her ranting and saying that Chris Hayes was trying to silence her like Harry Reid does.
Yes.
And because she's a woman who's concerned about her children, she gets silenced.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, Chris Hayes is just, okay, we're done. You know, and he did. He ended the interview, which good for him.
Mm-hmm.
He had thought that she was acting in good faith and would come on his show and behave like a debater and actually debate him.
Yeah.
When, as one commenter put it, you know, these folks from Americans for Prosperity will grind you into the heel of their shoe to get a high five on Twitchy. And that's, they just don't have any fair play involved. There's no fair play involved with this.
Because we're the enemy. And therefore, anything is permissible.
Sure enough, as sure as Twitter will do these things, there were right wingers on Twitter going, look at how she eviscerated Chris Hayes.
She destroyed him. She smashed
him. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
But I watched it 3 times and she actually got 3 statements of fact out in the middle of all of this. Harry Reid's trying to silence me and so are you because I'm a woman.
Uh-huh.
All 3 of which were false. All 3 of the statements that she made about the Affordable Care Act and the poll numbers on it, the level of poverty, what the amount of money for what is considered a poverty level person getting Medicaid that she had that wrong. Someone else on Twitter mentioned again, Gish Gallop. That is now becoming more of a thing.
It's,
you and I mentioned that a couple weeks ago.
It's all they got.
Yeah.
It's all they got. Just keep
spew. And then the interview's over and I won and I eviscerated him. Yeah.
And she did win. End of the day, he lost.
Yep.
He got his ass handed to him because he had no idea he brought a knife to a gunfight.
Yep. And he gave her a platform on his show that no matter how it went down, their side was going to say she eviscerated him. So she won.
And we keep doing that.
And we keep doing it. And he did tweet, by the way. He responded after that show because a lot of people told him what we told him, which is, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And he said, that show was bonkers. And then he also tweeted on a separate tweet, live and learn. So hopefully he's learned something from the experience.
I hope he has. I'm sure he has. He's a smart guy. You and I were on a liberal talk radio. This is liberal media is broken. Let's just start off by saying liberal media is broken. You and I were on liberal talk radio many, many months ago.
Yeah, I remember.
And
you're going to talk about the guy that they had on who was wanting to debate us.
And he was wanting to debate abortion or something. And between your vast knowledge of biblical and theological history and my minuscule knowledge, he looked stupid. I mean,
And I asked him, the point was, I asked him, well, do you think that tax cuts for billionaires should be part of the economic plan that we elect to the presidency? I mean, I was really just asking.
Right.
If he philosophically said, yes, I think that taxes should be as low as possible so that we starve the beast of government, and he takes that libertarian argument, then I know who I'm arguing with. Right.
Right.
And so I really asked him, and I was willing to accept that that's how he genuinely felt.
Right.
If he genuinely feels, yes, I believe that government gets in the way of people. I mean, I can make this argument.
Anybody.
Libertarian argument. Anybody can parrot that, right?
Any 14-year-old boy can do that.
Can parrot that, right. So I asked him, is this really how you feel, that tax cuts for billionaires should be part of the economic plan that we elect to the presidency? And his response was, I don't care about tax policy.
Yeah.
And that was when I was done.
He cared about trolling.
Yeah, and he really was a troll. Yeah.
He and millions like him don't really have opinions. They have grievances.
I felt bad that, in a way we were embarrassing the host of that show.
But I as politely as I could.
Yeah.
I
said, why do you have this guy on your show? Why do you answer the phone when he calls?
Why do you keep putting people like this on the air? Why? Why in the world? I mean, it's not like there's a whole lot of liberal talk shows out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a few major cities, and most of them are done in New York and L.A. Mm-hmm. and D.C. Chicago has one locally produced liberal show. Liberal talk is weak enough as it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're starving out here. Liberal television is starving out here. I mean, the whole morning is given to a conservative and a bunch of his frat buddies. So the idea that in this extremely small amount of time that we have to talk among each other, we keep putting conservatives in the middle of the conversation, trolls in the middle of the conversation, because that'll angry up the audience. That's good for that's controversial. Fuck that. I don't want to talk to these people.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent years talking to these people. They're full of shit. They come on the show to be trolls. And so I asked the host, why do you do this? And his answer was essentially, well,
we've talked about 9/11 and, he's kind of interesting when we talk about 9/11 and Building 7 and, oh, so he's a truther too. Yeah.
But
okay.
The idea that you're so desperate for
content
that you will deliberately put crazy people into the middle of your liberal talk show. And, Stephanie Miller does this.
But that's also why Karl Rove has a seat at the table.
Of course.
On whatever network he goes on, especially Fox. There's this 24-hour news cycle that has to be filled.
Hey, look, it's Bill Kristol on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. And so I dug this out from, this is specifically for you, Chris Hayes. And I know you listen to this podcast. I know you do.
You do, really?
And I know you want to put me on the air, but you're afraid to because you're afraid of what I might say. But, go ahead, Chris. I won't hurt you. I love you. I wish you were back on Saturdays where you could be 2 hours and really talk about stuff in depth. But I get it. You have a family, and that's fine. Don't put crazy people on the air. That's our lesson for today.
Right. And I think if you smell Orly Tate's,
yeah,
run away.
Yeah. If you're getting a strong Newt Gingrich in a wig vibe, somebody, just turn the camera off and back away.
Yeah, back away. Buy her a latte and or send her away with a sandwich and a cab.
That's right.
You've done that enough.
I've done that once or twice. Fare thee well, my lady.
Here's a sandwich.
Here's a sandwich and a complimentary beverage. And cab fare to the hell away from here.
But what about our relationship?
Oh, I've decided to live off the grid for a few years. But if you were a blogger back in 2005, you know, way, 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 way back then, there was a guy named Stephen Gilliard. And I'm going to read a quick quote from what he was writing back in 2005 when a whole bunch of people from the National Review Online and Instapundit were just swarming him and calling him a racist, which is hilarious. So he refers to Instapundit as Instacracker, just so you know. So when I get to that part, you'll know who I'm talking about. Conservatives make the assumption that liberals care what they think and will react to it. Mm-hmm. There's a tendency for liberals to try to be fair, to consider other viewpoints. So we get baited by them into debates on terms that they set. I'm going to act on the following. I don't care what conservatives think. The NRO corner thinks I'm a racist. I don't care. Their opinions on race are meaningless. Instacracker doesn't like what I say. That's the purpose of the exercise. I want conservatives to read this site and come away steaming. I don't want them to think they will like a word I will say here. I don't want them to think I will consider their opinions or viewpoints. I want them to think, boy, he doesn't like conservatives and really, really doesn't care what we say. I'm tired of people acting like these people can be reasoned with or talked to. They don't want to talk. They want to drive us away into the corner and ridicule our ideas. I'm not writing to make conservatives happy. I want them to hate my ideas. I'm not interested in debating them. I want to stop them. Dear Chris Hayes, please stop pretending that these people are interested in debating you. They're not. Mm-hmm. And if you're a liberal, please stop putting them on the air. They're not there to debate you. They don't want to debate you. They want to disrupt you, divert you, distract you, and kick up enough dust so they can crawl back to their liberal wingnut welfare troughs and say, didn't I kick his ass? Look what I did. And get a promotion. That's the only reason they're there. There are a few exceptions. Very few. And a lot of them are on MSNBC, and bless their hearts. Josh Barr is a fine and reasonably honest debater. Mm-hmm. But he is the rare exception. Please stop putting people who are clearly and obviously liars and crazy and are willing to say any fucking thing they want to disrupt your conversation. They're the problem. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that make it impossible for us to have the conversation you so desperately want us to have. So please, please stop giving them airtime, Stephanie Miller. Stop putting them on the air. Stop giving. They have their own fucking church. They have their own TV network. They have a million radio stations. Why do you have to put them on my liberal air? Why? For controversy? Okay.
Well, and you and I have said many times, and I've been saying this for years. I remember back, this was before we met. I made a video blog about missing conservatism, missing reasonable conservatives with whom to debate.
Yes.
Because it is intoxicating
it is.
To debate someone who has some facts at their disposal. And you may think they're wrong about everything, but you can have a lively discussion with someone mm-hmm. who disagrees with you. That's fun. And I think that's what Chris Hayes is after when he has Ben Dominic on his show. You may not like Ben Dominic very much, and you may not always agree with Josh Barr, but I think he's genuinely trying to open up the conversation mm-hmm. to have people on who will debate him, and maybe he'll learn something. And I applaud that. If you can find people who will be reasonable with you,
sure,
and you show them an undeniable fact, and they say, yeah, I can see that point because the data shows that, yes, that's true. There is truth, and I don't just get to create my own reality.
Uh-huh. Who would these people be again? I forget.
I think Josh Barr is one of them.
He is. He is one of them.
So let's encourage more of that. But Chris Hayes cannot have on someone from the Koch brothers. They're paid to lie. So no more paid liars. And I think Stephanie Miller's having these callers on in order to ridicule them for humor purposes. And I don't think it works personally.
No.
I don't think it's funny.
It was funny in 2003.
Yeah.
It's not funny anymore. They're serious. They're not kidding. Yeah. And while you're laughing at them, they're going to win the next election.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
take back the Senate. Ha ha ha.
Was that funny?
Yeah. I had a dialogue with a woman on Twitter today that she was very nervous about Governor Quinn in Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And Governor Quinn perhaps losing to a billionaire Republican for the governor of Illinois and us going the way of Wisconsin.
Yep.
I personally, and maybe I have blinders on, but I personally don't think that's going to happen. Primarily because this billionaire keeps talking.
Right. Well.
Yesterday, they had him on television talking about that he thought Illinois should use the national minimum wage. In other words, be like Alabama and Mississippi and just not have a minimum wage in the state.
Mm-hmm.
I think the minimum wage in Illinois is $8.25. Is that right?
Yeah. It's higher than the national.
Higher than the national. And so basically this guy is arguing for a pay cut for minimum wage workers in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
And he's a billionaire. So yeah. Self-funding his campaign. So I have a little bit of faith that we'll maintain our Democratic governor, primarily because everyone is really angry with how things are going in the economy in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the same kind of problems that lots of states have with underfunded pensions and deficits and so on. But I genuinely don't think Democrats in the state are blaming Governor Quinn for that.
No, but there's a lot of people who will. Illinois really is a swing state.
It is. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are willing to say, look, we gave you a chance.
Mm-hmm.
We're broke. Mm-hmm. And you know, money wins.
Money can win. But I wonder what he thinks is going to happen to tax revenue if all the minimum wage workers in the state, this Republican thinks is going to happen if all the minimum wage workers are all of a sudden making a dollar less an hour.
Why does he care?
Well,
will the day ever come when he's ever asked that question?
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as you can talk in platitudes and float above everything else, you're fine. You can get away with a whole lot. You can get 45% that way.
Sure.
Then you just have to get another 6% through something. And you spend $1 billion
staying home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say make Sheldon Adelson spend it all.
Well, I always get nervous around this time before elections because there's a part of me that I will vote, I will militate, I will do whatever is needed to get out the vote. But I just have a very strong feeling that we're going to be looking at a Republican Congress this time next year.
Mm-hmm. Unless it turns into a bunch of teabaggers talking.
Yeah,
in which case, you know, and everybody thought that Harry Reid was just going to lose. There was no way Harry Reid could win.
That's true.
And then he picked his own opponent.
Yes, he did.
And that's how he won. So go figure. We have an email from a listener who wants to go by the handle of Red Hand.
Red Hand.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this. Is that all right with you?
Sure.
And then you make some comments about it.
Sure.
I am a devotee of your podcast and will contribute soon. Thank you very much. A few words about me. I am something of a John Cole convert in that for most of my adult life, I was a staunch Republican. Certainly from 1972 through, say, 1999. Though it probably helped that I was an in-house attorney for a defense contractor. Yeah, it probably does.
Yeah.
I did vote Democrat for Carter in 76 and for Clinton in 92, but considered these votes anomalies. When Reagan came along, I overlooked his hideous domestic policies in favor of the defense buildup because I felt strongly that the USSR posed an existential threat to the USA and that, quote, the Democrats couldn't be trusted with foreign policy. Hey, from that perspective, Ronnie seemed a great president. He won the Cold War, didn't he, et cetera, et cetera. I just couldn't bring myself to vote at all in 2000 and 2004. Call it my period of political anomie. Anomie?
Anomie, yeah.
Okay, anomie. Thank you. I thought W was an ignoramus, but worse, I still couldn't bring myself to vote Democratic. The blinders started coming off in 2001 when I lost my fancy corporate job, went through a divorce, and then started dating a Russian illegal alien, now my wife, thank you very much. And at the same time, I reinvented myself as an immigration lawyer. Oh, good for you. That same year, of course, we had 9/11, and from my perch in North Jersey, where I could literally see the towers burning, I also felt in my guts that it was the result of gross incompetence on the part of those Republicans whom I had felt were better at foreign policy. Nobody could have predicted that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
While Bush and Cheney started beating the war drums against Iraq, I had a complete WTF reaction. I remembered Tonkin Gulf, yes. And I said to myself, you bastards better be right about those WMDs. I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I was nervous as hell when I saw the public conflict between Shinseki and the despicable Wolfowitz. man, what's wrong with this picture? Of course, we now know what was wrong. It was all lies and the most immoral thing I have seen our government do. The damage W has done to our society, to the rule of law, and to our economy will take decades to reverse, if in fact we can. My conversion away from conservatism was complete when I started representing foreign citizens in political asylum claims, and I realized that the foreign government contact I was arguing was torture, was in fact less brutal than what we were doing in Gitmo and Abu Ghraib. At the same time, I found that I could not stand the way Republican domestic policies were making HELOTs out of our former middle class.
By the way, the word HELOT is not used nearly enough in conversation.
No, it's not. No. While those at the top just seemed to get richer and richer as they bought ever more political influence, there is no doubt that we were and still are living through a second Gilded Age, one just as disgusting as the first one. The whole religious right nonsense, with the Terry Schiavo federal legislation, added a second level of insanity to the right, and I found I had nothing in common with anything those people believed anymore. So in 2008, I decided to start voting again. I became a registered Democrat and will never vote Republican again for anything. I greatly enjoy your podcasts, which speak to me like you and Bluegal were family. We love it when you say that. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks for all you do to keep the true progressive spirit alive.
Well, thank you.
P.S. In the unlikely event you use any of this in a podcast, please use my handle, Red Hand. Okay, Red Hand. Hey, thank you very much.
It's done.
And this, I think, is a much more common story than minus the career trajectory that is a much more common story than you see. I saw on Twitter this morning there is a guy running for something in Georgia. His handle is his name, For Georgia. And his tweet is, I'm fighting to shrink the size of big government, balance the budget, and stop Obamacare. Will you stand with me?
Yeah.
And I'm going to reply to him and say, silly Republican, balanced budgets are from Clinton's.
That's right. That's right. First of all, I appreciate the letter very much. We both do.
Yes.
And it is deeply encouraging. I have a friend of mine who sort of went through a similar career, not career path, sort of awareness. Mm-hmm. I think he now considers himself an independent, but he was a Rush Limbaugh listening, Rush Room.
He's come a long way. Yeah.
And I had to really, you know, he was a colleague of mine and a very nice guy, and we had a lot in common. And I really had to sort of work on him and work on him and work on him. But the break came during the Bush years. Mm-hmm. It really did. It was, for him, the fever broke.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God. And then that caused him to retrospectively look at, sort of pick at all of the other things that had led him up to that point and just sort of shake his head ruefully. And it also helped that he vacations with friends of his who are a lot more hardcore than he is. Mm-hmm. They go off to the family compound and they shoot guns. They shoot at trees and they shoot at things. It's, you know, that's what boys do in the woods. But he sort of was floating ideas to his friends who'd been friends a long time and who will remain his friends and who are the people he will call, I am absolutely sure, come the zombie apocalypse, because they can handle a crossbow. Mm-hmm. And they know how to, you know, they know how to juice up a car, and then they know how to get you out of a mud hole if you're in one. They're very handy that way. But, you know, he sort of floated a couple of ideas about sort of the way the country is run, and out came the crazy conspiracy stuff that they would swear by. And he really sort of saw that as, Jesus Christ, these people really believe that, you know, all of the black helicopter shit that he sort of looked askance at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, well, that's fine. You know, that's, everybody believes, you know, everybody has crazy relatives in their family. They sincerely believe that. Down in their souls, they really believe that there's a communist cell running out of the White House out to kill them. And that George Bush was the greatest president ever, right up until he wasn't. And then they never heard of George Bush. And that really broke the fever with him somewhat. But that was sort of the last train out. That was the last lifeboat off that. Because if you didn't leave the GOP, if you didn't bail on the conservative movement, and by bail, I don't mean put on a tri-corner hat and start calling yourself a patriot, because that's just camouflage. That's just people who don't want to take responsibility for all the crazy shit they said and did and put on stage makeup and pretend they were never there. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
But if you didn't bail on the entire concept of Reaganomics, supply side, foreign policy, neoconservatism, the whole idea that give plutocrats infinite power and that's how you have a healthy robust country. If you didn't cut and run from that theory during the Bush administration, this is what we have left over. All the people who are still hanging on like grim death to their delusions. And these are the people who someone mentioned this poll the other day, and I looked it up, and Jiminy Christmas, it's true. 41% of Republicans believe that Benghazi is the greatest scandal in American history.
Yep, yep.
It eclipses Iran-Contra, Watergate, the Iraq War, Teapot Dome, for all I have no idea if they even know what that is. But Benghazi eclipses all previous scandals, even combined. It is so much more evil and awful and terrible and indicative of the depravity of this White House that just wants to sell us out to foreign monsters. And they really believe it. And for those people, there is no hope or help. There is the sure and certain knowledge that most of them are over 70.
Yep.
And they won't be with us for a whole lot longer. I of course, wish everyone a long and healthy life. I wish my elderly relatives long lives. But eventually they just will stop being part of the equation. But until they are, coping with them and dealing with them and finding a way to contain them is sort of the liberal program.
Yeah.
And the way you do that is by admitting they exist.
Yep.
And we just don't, and that's the thing the media won't do. It won't admit that they exist as they are, and they think what they think, and they do as they do, because that's who they are.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Charlie Murphy Mew. And Charlie Murphy Mew is a very attractive cat. I hope you'll go over to our Facebook page or website and take a look. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any address, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties would like you to know that their hand-picked committee has indeed cleared them of all wrongdoing.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Today's Science Fiction University is from a listener and follower of our podcast and blogs. He goes by Dog-Faced Herman.
A real person, such as yourself.
Such as yourself. Very nice guy. And he sent us an audio, Science Fiction University, but he sent it to us in 10 clips, so I had to paste them together and figure out how we could use them, because they were in 10 separate clips. If you send if you send us a Science Fiction University, just send it to us as one big long MP3 or WAV file, however you want to send it to us is fine. But just put 2 or 3 seconds in between each one, and then I can use one file. That's fine. Makes it a little easier for me.
You can drop it in just that way.
Right. And I can edit it from there.
I have the best and hardest working sound editor in the business.
I'm very grateful to people who are willing to send us Science Fiction University stuff.
They take a lot of time and they really pick their questions. I mean,
they do. They really, really do.
Holy crap. They actually listen.
They actually listen to us.
And all right.
We're very grateful.
Let me clear my mind.
Clear your mind. We're going to listen to some audios. These are from movies for the most part. Number one.
You think it takes talent to play Frankenstein? It's all makeup and then grunting.
Bella, I agree 100%.
Ed Wood with the fabulous Johnny Depp.
That's right.
And,
very good.
I forget who played Bela Lugosi. It was Martin Landau.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Oh, yeah. He was very good in that.
Yes.
Number two.
This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations. but not necessarily the only ones.
Yeah, that would be In Search Of.
Yeah.
With Leonard Nimoy with his 70s haircut.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was full of, you know, it was bullshit, but it was... And it matched the movies that my dad was taking me to at the time.
Yeah.
The Boggy Creek Monster and In Search of Ancient Astronauts and crap like that. So
Dogface Tournament pointed out, it's probably not fiction to the Alex Jones crowd.
That's right. That's just facts. That's just science right there. Deal with it. It's proven. Or as the woman says on Game of Thrones, it is known. It is known.
It is known. Yes. Huh? Okay. This one is a toss out to the internet kiddies.
Okay.
The naming of cats is a difficult matter. It's not just one of your holiday games. You may think at first I'm mad as a hatter when I tell you that each cat got three different names.
Well, that'd be Logan's Run. That's the very end of Logan's Run where they find out that they stumble on the Statue of Liberty and they go, God damn you. No, that's not it. No, I believe he stumbles onto the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Stumbles into the U.S. Capitol. And that's the end of the movie. A lot of cats. And I believe that's partially based on the Roman... Colosseum, lots of cats lived there after the fall, because I don't know why that's interesting.
Well, and was Peter Ustinov.
Yes,
by the way.
The wonderful Peter Ustinov.
Yep. All right. Number four.
Radiation. Yes, indeed. You hear the most outrageous lies about it. Half-baked Gogglebox do-gooders telling everybody it's bad for you. Pernicious nonsense.
Yeah, Repo Man. That's right at the very beginning of Repo Man, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's the crazy guy in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who worked at the Los Alamos. By the way, a wonderful movie. Please don't remake this movie.
No, please don't remake this movie. Produced by, you know who produced Repo Man?
I do.
Executive producer?
Michael Nesmith.
That's right.
Your hero.
I met him.
Yeah.
I met him and...
And you impressed him.
I impressed him because I wasn't interested in talking with him about the monkeys. I wanted to talk to him about Repo Man.
And didn't you have a sign up at your desk?
I did. I had a plate of shrimp up above my desk. He was touring my office for some reason and the office I was working in at the time in Austin. And I put up a sign above my desk that said plate of shrimp, which if you've seen Repo Man, you know why that's
so important. That's before Google, and you could look crap up on the fly and pretend to be clever.
No.
You actually had to know your stuff.
I had to know plate of shrimp. Yeah. All right. The next one is Dogface Terman calls this the worst movie ever made or the best worst movie ever made. And here's the clip.
I cannot, yet I must. How do you calculate that? At what point on the graph you must and cannot meet? Yet I must what I cannot.
I don't have the slightest clue. It sounds like the big silvery robot from Logan's Run, but that can't be right.
No,
so.
It's not. It's from 1953, Robot Monster.
Oh, robot. I have to look that up. I wonder if that starred Robbie.
Yeah, I don't know. Might have been one of his. Yeah, they reused that robot a lot.
Because that's what a robot should look like, damn it.
Right. Okay. The next one, you should know the author of this. This is a TV episode. Really? Go ahead.
Time is fluid. The waters of forever close. And passage may not be completed. The present and the future are for a moment united.
Okay, that's Outer Limits. That's the voice, the control voice.
Yeah, and it's the episode Soldier, which
Soldier.
I don't know if you knew that.
That's Harlan Ellison. That's one of the two episodes that James Cameron ripped off to make Terminator. That Demon with a Glass Hand with Robert Culp.
See?
Also Outer Limits. Also, I've shot in the Bradbury building, I think. It was a wonderful episode of Outer Limits with zero budget.
Yep. 1964.
So, yeah.
All right. Number seven is, you might recognize this voice.
I and your leaders have devoted many years of enormous effort.
It is a holy mission, gentlemen. You should consider yourselves highly honored to have been chosen to perform it.
I recognize Atticus Finch anywhere.
News for you. We are listening to the audiobook. Junior dude as a freshman in high school has to read To Kill a Mockingbird.
And you know, last night, if you had walked in to our house, I would have hit you. But if you'd walked in, it looked like pretty much any hearth around the hearth scene mm-hmm. you could have seen going back 150, 200 years.
Yep.
Mom's knitting. We're listening to the storyteller. In this case, it's an audio book, mm-hmm. but it could have been me or you reading a book mm-hmm. and sitting around quietly listening to this wonderful story. So since it's Gregory Peck or Gregory Peckery, depending on how big of a fan of Frank Zappa you are, I have to say On the Beach.
No, it's The Boys from Brazil, 1978.
Oh, yeah. Yes, with his creepy mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. That was a really good one.
And the last one?
I got no clue. It sounds like, if I had to guess, mid-70s science fiction dragnet thing with someone sucking on a bong in the background.
Actually, Dogface Terman says, extra points if you point out that this is Day of the Triffids.
Oh, okay.
The Triffids sound like a bong. It says
really?
extra points if you point out that Triffids sound like a bong.
That's, well, I will retroactively, but I didn't know it was that movie.
He asks about that song. This song saves three people from what?
Being eaten by plants. Black and white 1950s at some point, I'm guessing. And so I remember seeing it.
They're killed by seawater.
Oh, that would make sense. That makes sense.
They lure effective-looking triffids away with music from an ice cream van. Yes,
okay.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Very good.
And a triffid... I didn't know this. A triffid appears aboard the spacecraft as one of the plants harvested by aliens in E.T.
Ha!
Also, in Rocky Horror Picture Show, the song Science Fiction Double Feature has in the lyrics, "And I really got hot when I saw Jeanette Scott fight a triffid that spits poison and kills."
Ah.
So,
well,
there you go. Triffids have been out there for a while. Well, thank you very much, Dog-Faced Herman. We deeply appreciate your help in sending us that Science Fiction University.
Thank you. I feel better about myself now.